From KUER.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Last week, The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints launched a new website. Leaders say it was designed to clarify their position on same-sex attraction. Now, there are questions as to whether anything is really new on that site. But what's remarkable is that, first of all, it features the words gay and lesbian. And it also includes videos of actual gay and lesbian members of the church. The site says this is a collection of conversations. Some say it's a significant step forward for leaders who seem to be trying to adapt. Others say the website doesn't really change anything, that homosexuality is still treated as an affliction, and that gay people who expect to be considered members in good standing must either be celibate or try to live in heterosexual relationships. Today in the program, we're talking about this new website, and we're hoping to hear from you. Join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about a new website launched late last week by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Leaders say they want to explore and clarify their position on same-sex attraction, which is not to say they haven't been clear in the past. Back in the 90s, church leader Elder Dallin H. Oaks called erotic feelings between people of the same sex irregular. He said that advocates of the gay lifestyle were trying to accept as normal what was not normal. But of course, that position has evolved over time. These days, church leaders do acknowledge people are born gay. The problem is acting on the sexual impulse that comes with it. That, they say, is a sin. Here's Elder Oaks on the video included on that new website.
What we do know is that the doctrine of the church, that sexual activity should only occur between a man and a woman who are married, has not changed and is not changing. But what is changing and what needs to change is to help our own members and families understand how to deal with same-gender attraction.
Today in the program, we're talking about this new website and what it may be saying about the church's evolving position on the subject. Some see it as an important step forward. Others say it's just a move to minimize the backlash over the church's involvement in efforts to ban gay marriage in states like California. What do you think? We invite you to join the conversation. 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'd also like to hear from those of you on Facebook and on Twitter. Joining us on the program is Bradley Kramer. He's a blogger for the Mormon blog By Common Consent. He's a PhD candidate in sociocultural anthropology at the University of Michigan. He's writing there on Mormon rituals. Kramer is a practicing Latter-day Saint, we should say. He's joining us from Ann Arbor at the University of Michigan studios there. And Bradley Kramer, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation, Doug.
John Charles Duffy is also joining us. He's a visiting professor of comparative religions at Miami University in Ohio. He's written about Mormons and homosexuality at the online magazine Religion Dispatches. He himself is a gay man who was raised Mormon, and he's speaking to us from his office in Oxford, Ohio. And John Charles Duffy, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Pleased to be here.
Well, I want to start, Bradley Kramer, let me start with you. There's this intriguing sentence in the comments of Elder Oaks on that video. I played an excerpt of it. But he says in there, he says, this topic was discussed with all of the general authorities of the church in April of 2012. What do you make of that? What does that little tidbit reveal, that the church leaders are, is that significant, that there shows that they're getting together to kind of work this out?
I think on the one hand, it shows that concern over how Mormonism and the LDS Church are perceived publicly in regards to this question. In other words, the concern that Mormonism is generally viewed as hostile to lesbian and gay people, as bigoted, as backward, etc., is becoming an increasingly driving concern for church leaders. Something that is big enough that they, you know, whatever sort of meeting Elder Oaks was hinting at, that a meeting of that scale actually took place, and that although the church even very recently has made it clear that trying to prevent or overturn gay marriage in various jurisdictions has been a priority. It now seems that trying to sort of combat this image of Mormonism as anti-gay is also a very pressing priority for church leaders.
Well, because one of the first questions, of course, is, and it's a skeptical one, given the amount of money and effort that the church has put into denying marriage to same-sex couples, efforts like in Proposition 8 in California, for example, the question is, you know, why did they create the website and how much of that was damage control for the backlash they've experienced because of that? Bradley Kramer, what do you think? A little bit of both, right? They're concerned about their members, but this is always on their mind, I guess.
I think it's got to be a little bit of both. I mean, I was very intrigued as I sort of studied some of the materials in the Proposition 8 campaign. The church also created web materials for that campaign, resources that they hoped that, in particular, that young church members would try to use in their efforts at campaigning. They created videos and Q&As, FAQs, and web resources that, you know, church members could link to on social media sites, etc. And as I reviewed those materials, one of the things that really struck me was a very major concern of church leaders was that that the church's position on this issue was sort of being, it was in danger of being recoded in the culture, in the wider culture, as being bigoted, intolerant. In other words, I think that church leaders were and continue to be afraid that at some point the statement gays and lesbians should not be allowed to get married will be considered to be as bigoted as the statement members of different races shouldn't be allowed to get married to each other is considered to be bigoted today. I think they see the possibility or maybe even the inevitability of that cultural shift as something that will significantly move the Mormon position to the margins. And so this should be also, I think, viewed in light of really obvious efforts that church leaders have made over the past decade, and in particular, I mean, maybe even longer than the past decade, maybe beginning at least with the tenure of Church President Gordon B. Hinckley, but in particular in recent years, this effort at mainstreaming Mormonism, at making Mormons normal. Mormons are regular people, and Mormons aren't weird. So you see this with the I'm a Mormon campaign. And there's this real concern that after they've committed so much energy and resources and money to trying to rebrand Mormonism as normal and regular, there's this problem that, oh, well, maybe this sort of important tenet of Mormonism, at least what current church leaders consider to be a very important tenet of Mormonism, and sort of the centrality of heteronormative sexual relationships in Mormonism is now running the risk of pushing us back onto the margins. And I think they're really terrified of that.
John Charles Duffy, what are you saying is the reason, the principal reason for them creating a website like this?
I'm hesitant to say which is the principal reason, but I would certainly agree that there is a public relations dimension to this. I think that Brad is right in seeing it as church leaders concerned that their position is at risk of becoming culturally marginalized and not wanting to see that happen. I do think it's important, though, and I'm smiling a little as I say this because I didn't think I was going to be in this position. I thought I was going to be the more pessimistic, skeptical voice here. But I want to do a plug for not just dismissing this website as sheerly about public relations, sheerly about, you know, how the church is positioning itself in relation to the larger culture. I want to give credit to church leaders for wanting to change the way that LDS members think about and talk about homosexuality and treat same-sex attracted members. One of the things that I find particularly significant about the site is the way it shows a shift in the options that the church as an institution is willing to authorize for members who understand themselves as same-sex attracted or gay lesbian. We are seeing an interesting shift, and the website betokens that.
Wait, what do you mean? Explain what you mean by that.
Well, the shift that we're seeing, I think, is that for a long time, from the 60s, 70s forward, the favored approach to this issue within the church for members who, you know, identified themselves as gay or same-sex attracted was to urge – to see marriage as the really only viable option here. You know, right. People who were same-sex attracted needed to somehow overcome that attraction so that they could become married heterosexually. And there are organizations and counselors and therapists who were promoting therapeutic techniques to try to make that happen. What I think is significant about this website is that it shows – I'm not sure I would say necessarily a retreat from that track – but a willingness to say more emphatically to same-sex attracted Latter-day Saints, we don't necessarily expect marriage as the outcome. In an eternal sense, yes, you know, we're committed to the idea that marriage is necessary for exaltation, but we're open to the possibility that therapy may not solve this problem. We're taking a non-committal stance on that. We're classifying that as a mystery we don't understand, and we are willing to let Latter-day Saints function in the church, have callings, presumably go to the temple, have all the benefits that members would have while identifying themselves openly, perhaps as same-sex attracted, but not working to overcome that attraction to be married. People who see that attraction as something immutable in themselves, The church has become accommodating of members who understand themselves that way. And I think that's what the website shows quite clearly.
So I guess the question is also, who are these people on the website? Bradley Kramer, give us a sense of the people. These are gay Mormons who are at various stages, I guess, of dealing with the question of their own sexuality.
Yeah, and I think this dovetails really nicely with the point that John Charles was making about sort of the idea of marriage as a viable option or as an ideal sort of outcome for gay and lesbian members of the church. I think as a backdrop to this, I think it's important to note that until very, very recently, Mormon discourse about homosexuality was really about male homosexuality. In other words, the prototypical gay person was a gay male. And so a lot of our way of talking about this, our way of sort of positioning homosexuality as a problematic state of being or lifestyle or choice, in the past has really always centered on the figure of the male homosexual. And that's something that you do see shifting. But I mean, when you talk about the very sort of harmful and sort of, you know, unenlightened approaches that Mormons and church leaders have taken in the past, it has been directed largely at the threat posed by male homosexuality.
I want to play a few clips actually from the website itself. You were mentioning women. There's a woman named Suzanne, on this particular video. And I think what's interesting about it, and listen to it, Bradley Kramer and John Charles Duffy, because I want to get you to react to how she's talking about her. I don't think she may use this term exactly, but her condition, the fact that she's gay. Because you see this throughout the website, the idea that this is something to overcome or something to deal with. Let me play this. This is a Suzanne from the new LDS website.
It wasn't very long ago, maybe 3 years ago, I could say that I just accepted me for me. And I have a very dear, dear friend who just blessed my life and who just let me express myself for me and not try to change me and just help me to believe in who I am. And that was when I was most comfortable saying, yeah, this is part of me, it's gonna be a part of me, and I'm okay. I just need to make it a healthy part of me as opposed to the unhealthy part of me that's been for 10 plus years.
Okay, John Charles, what does she mean, the unhealthy part of me? Is this sort of a reference to the unhealthy part of her was when she knew she was gay but was engaging in sexual relationships? Is that what she's getting at?
I don't know. That's a great question. We need to have her here to probe that question more. I don't know. That could be taken to mean many things. It could be taken to mean that, you know, acting on these desires is seen as unhealthy, or perhaps she's suggesting that she has rejected a certain understanding of what the gay or lesbian lifestyle looks like as unhealthy, or maybe she means to say that feelings of guilt and low self-esteem are unhealthy. That there could be a lot packed into that that would need to be teased out.
It's interesting, though, that's the only thing that the video itself really hints at, is that whereas before she wasn't comfortable in her own skin and she wasn't accepting who she was and learning to be happy with it, now she is.
So I guess in some ways, I think what's interesting about it is some of the language in some of the videos, even from among church leaders, seem a little bit vague. Getting at this question of there being, and we'll talk about this more in depth as we go along, but this question of there being hope. They're not talking about exactly hope for what, whether a person will be cured or those kinds of things.
Exactly, because that's in flux right now. What hope would have meant 20, perhaps even 10 years ago would have been, you can overcome this. You know, through prayer, fasting, therapy, church activity, you know, these feelings can be overcome. They will recede and you can be married. And what's happened now is that there's actually less faith in that on the part of church leaders. That's become an open question. And there's the willingness to say, well, hope might take various forms. Hope might take the form of someone remaining celibate all their life in the hope that in the world to come, their same-sex attractions will be taken from them and they can marry heterosexually in the next world. So hope could mean different things now.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that it doesn't mean anymore, which I think is very important, remember that for a long time when church leaders sort of advocated marriage as the optimal outcome, I think it's important to note that in some sense marriage was seen as part of the therapeutic process. As a way of, you know, if you remain worthy, if you sort of do all the things, and maybe it'll require therapy or whatever, but if you get married and you're sort of faithful to your spouse and keep your covenants, then that'll be a part of what heals you. But now the sort of the poster child for an optimal outcome is Ty Mansfield, who isn't saying, however problematic it is to sort of hold up, you know, the unicorn, the guy who sort of shot the moon, who happens to actually be at least at the moment making this work, however problematic that might be, what's interesting is that Ty isn't getting up and saying, I got married and this went away. He's saying, I'm still gay.
John Charles, hold on a minute, because I want to play an excerpt from Ty's video. Bradley's referring to a video that includes a man named Ty who talks about his experience being gay. And let me play this, because you can get a sense of kind of what's going on, and we can talk about it, again, from that LDS website that was just launched late last week.
And it was a slow process over several years. I don't know that I ever really started to feel a sense of, like, changing from homosexual to heterosexual as much as I just felt like the feelings didn't have as much of, they didn't have any control or power. They didn't have the pull in my life that they had once had. And I went from thinking I probably won't marry in this life and really believing that I probably wouldn't to feeling like I think I will marry in this life, but it'll be later rather than sooner, to thinking I will marry and it'll be sooner rather than later. But this is over a process of like 7 years. So this is a long time of just taking life a day at a time, trying to stay close to the Spirit, letting the Lord guide me as to that next step. So I decided that I wanted to pray and ask God if marriage was in the cards for me. And I was okay with not receiving an answer, but I thought, you know, the surest way not to receive an answer is to not ask. Shortly after I had this prayer, there was no immediate answer. I reconnected with my now wife.
Which gives you a sense of where he went with that. And I guess the question is, John Charles Duffy, to you first, should that be a disturbing story for gay people? Or should that be a hopeful story for gay people? Because I imagine someone who is gay could look at it either way. What do you think?
I think it's a problematic story, but it's problematic depending on where you're coming from and what you want. I would say that what's interesting about Ty's story, when Ty first began writing in 2004, saying that he had decided that, you know, his same-sex attraction was just part of who he was, and he wasn't expecting to be married. That view brought him a lot of criticism from people in the LDS therapeutic community who were committed to the idea that, no, this is not immutable. This can be overcome. And they saw Ty Mansfield as representing a slippery slope toward the acceptance of homosexuality. The fact that Ty now has actually, you know, gone for the route of marriage is an interesting turn. I suspect that the fact that his story is, as Bradley says, he's become one of the poster children. Another poster child is Josh Weed, another gay-identified man who has chosen heterosexual marriage. I think the fact that those remain the poster children is a sign that, as far as church leadership is concerned, the optimal outcome is still heterosexual marriage within this lifetime, as it is for all of the church's singles. The church is now willing to accommodate the possibility of lifelong celibacy, but we don't really have good poster children for that yet because lifelong celibacy is lifelong. So it's not as if someone who has married has passed a threshold you can point to. So yeah, I think there's still that desire to see marriage as normative, and I think the Ty Mansfield story shows that really well. So, in terms of whether this is a good story or not, it depends. I mean, if your politics are such that you think that people who identify as gay should accept that about themselves and should not go for the option of heterosexual marriage, but should demand the right to be homosexually married, then no, Ty Mansfield's story is going to be quite politically problematic for you.
So Bradley Cramer, you don't see that as a mixed message that they're sending?
Oh, I definitely see it as a mixed message. I mean, and I see it as problematic in exactly the ways that John Charles lays out. What I do find interesting about it, though, is that you have this kind of refiguring of the way that, you know, that optimal heterosexual relationship is described, because what you have in the case of both Ty and Josh is not men who were sort of you know, cured of their condition by heterosexual marriage or where you know, a successful where getting married heterosexually represents a kind of kind of apotheosis of that therapeutic process, but rather where homosexuality is still a part of who they are, but in their particular cases, marriage is a part of how they manage a problem that isn't going to, you know, manage a condition that isn't going to go away. So it's problematic in that it still treats homosexuality as a condition, as inherently problematic, and it treats heterosexual marriage as an optimal outcome. But it no longer does that in a way that suggests that homosexuality or same-sex attraction or same-gender attraction, as church leaders call it, is going to disappear, is something that you can just get rid of. And I think that's an interesting step forward, even from a very progressive perspective. Fully acknowledging all the problems that John Charles laid out in his analysis.
Building on what Bradley is saying, one thing I find really interesting about Suzanne's story as you played it is that as she talks about coming to a place of self-acceptance, she's using the kind of language that has come to conventionally be associated with coming out stories of gay and lesbian people. And I suppose that, you know, in terms of her psychological health, that's a desirable outcome. What is, again, politically problematic about that, perhaps, though, is that the kind of language that there's a certain sort of political narrative which has been in place within the gay community, which says once you recognize you have these feelings, you come to accept them, you affirm yourself, and then as an extension of that, you become committed to working for gay rights. And that's not necessarily where Suzanne's story is going. Suzanne is coming out in a sense, but that coming out does not translate necessarily into the kind of political agenda that historically coming out has translated into, which is potentially problematic depending again on your politics, but at least even just seen neutrally is a very interesting cultural development in terms of the diversification of gay identities in America.
That's John Charles Duffy. He's a visiting professor of comparative religion at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio, joining us by Skype today. Bradley Kramer is also with us. He's a blogger at By Common Consent. He's also a PhD candidate at the University of Michigan. We invite you to join us, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about a new website launched late last week by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which explores the church's position on same-sex attraction. It's not clear if the website represents anything particularly new from the church on the subject. It calls for love and compassion, but it also insists that people who are gay not yield, which is the word they use, yield to their sexuality. We're asking what prompted the website and what it reveals about the church's evolving position on being gay and being Mormon. And we invite you to join us. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We have with us Bradley Kramer, a blogger at By Common Consent, and John Charles Duffy. He's a visiting professor of comparative religion at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. Joining us also on the program now is Kendall Wilcox. He's an independent filmmaker working on a project called Far Between, which explores what it means to be gay and Mormon. He's also on the steering committee for Mormons Building Bridges, which fosters dialogue between the two communities. Kendall Wilcox is gay and an active member of the LDS Church. And welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
So I guess the initial question for you is, how did you react to the website and what did you see that was significant about it?
It's interesting because this is obviously something that people like me have been waiting for a long time. We've heard that it was in the works and was very happy to know that it was coming sort of impatiently. When it actually came, it literally took me by surprise, and actually I had to sort of psychologically adjust to the shift that it now means in terms of the emphasis that people like me that are trying to engender conversation in the Mormon community about this issue, they've been pushing for something as simple, which from an outsider's perspective, this is nothing big. This is tiny. But from an insider's perspective, it's huge. And so I had to do some psychological adjusting. But
what did you make of the fact that they used the words gay and lesbian?
Right. That alone, for example, is huge. Yeah. Previous to this, you know, we've had very explicit instructions from Elder Oaks on a couple of occasions saying that you do not use those as nouns. You only use them as adjectives to describe a feeling or a condition or so on. So the fact that it's in the URL, that gays and Mormons is in the URL, yeah, it could be seen a little bit of as a PR stunt, but also that's significant to people like me who have been dealing with this for a long time.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because it seems like on one hand, it's kind of that give and take that it seems to be there. I want to play an excerpt from D. Todd Christofferson. He's in the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles. He says something that I think I wanted to get you to react to in this question of whether or not this is an affliction. This is something mm-hmm. people struggle with. Mm-hmm. Here it is.
We're giving meaning to struggle in the sense that we help each other through our challenges. This is a challenge, and all of us can understand that and can be empathetic about that because we all have a challenge. I heard it expressed once. Someone said, we all have a horse to tame. And so same-sex attraction may be one and something else with someone else. But we can all appreciate, I think, that each of us face challenges in life. And this is a way for us to help each of us understand better a particular one that may not be so well-known or a common experience.
So you have on one hand empathy. Mm-hmm. Let's share that common experience. And then on the other hand, he's talking about it being a challenge, it being a struggle, it being, as he put it, a horse to tame. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that?
Well, again, this is a continuation of sort of the rhetoric from before. But the reality is that for somebody like me and most people that I've ever talked to about this, the challenge does not come inherently from being gay. You know, you don't wake up each morning and feel like, oh, I have such a challenge that I'm gay. The challenge, of course, comes when your sort of innate sexuality, you know, comes in contact with your culture, with your religion around you. So it's more the prohibition based on current Mormon doctrine that causes it to be such a challenge for people.
You think that's what he's talking about?
No.
Neither do I. Yeah, or at least no. Not the sense you get from it.
That's what I'm sort Got of my response to that attitude that he's perpetuating is that no, the prohibition is on this is what causes the challenge. But for me, still this pushes the conversation closer for the majority of the membership that will pay attention to this website and really process it. It'll help push them closer to this to the real issue: is how do I genuinely show love, genuinely, not just in word. Show love to people who may be engaged in something that I am taught is sin. That's the real issue. And I'm not even going to go into the love the sinner, hate the sin, but it's how do I genuinely do that? And this pushes us closer and really challenges members more than it ever has before.
So it sounds like what you're saying is, look, let's take the good parts. Mm-hmm. And there's still – but it also tells you that there's – more room to grow.
Absolutely.
I guess, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's about context. From an insider's perspective, like somebody like me, a gay Mormon who's been dealing with this for decades, this is a huge step forward because it is challenging members directly and giving them instruction to be loving and kind and engage in real conversation like they've never done before. From an outsider's perspective, of course, this is probably a little too late or just a cynical PR stunt or what have you. Insider perspective, it's a good thing.
Let's get to some phone calls. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us. Kathy has been waiting. Welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you. I spent a long time on this website the other night. I was terribly troubled. I feel that the church, and I grew up LDS. I'm no longer active in the church, but a lot of my family is. They're still treating a person being gay as a condition that needs to be treated and prayed for to change. And I was especially saddened by this young woman, Suzanne, who's, in my opinion, been relegated to the position of the family dog by her own family members. She's good enough to babysit the children, but it's as if she's been given the message, you'll never have a family of your own, and you'll never be good enough to raise children of your own. I just feel like it perpetuates that idea as well, that if you think you're getting closer to feeling straight, go ahead and try out your straightness on a woman and see if that works. It's perpetuating that idea and ruining lives in the meanwhile.
Yeah, let me get Kendall Wilcox to respond to that. Would you this idea, you yourself, mm-hmm. for example, would be relegated to the role of the bachelor uncle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I am right now, and it's not always pleasant. Let's be honest. And I completely empathize with what the caller is saying. And again, it just sort of goes back to the context because in many ways, yeah, this is still too little, too late. It's too slow. On the other hand, though, again, giving perspective, I know that this website, if taken to heart by a new sector of the Mormon population who previous to this literally a week ago would have rejected their children or a stake or a ward leader who would have taken a temple recommend away from a parent who supports their gay child.
Yeah, this happened in Logan not so long ago.
Yeah, this is recent, yeah. So for in that perspective, that's night to day, but yet, of course, yeah, from another outsider's perspective, well, you got so much further to go. Absolutely.
John Charles Duffy and Bradley Kramer, I want to get you involved in this. We don't have a lot of time. I want to get to more calls. But do any of you have something to add to Kathy's conversation?
Well, I think it's interesting that – I mean, on the one hand, my reaction was very similar to hers. I found the language of affliction and struggle and challenge, even though they had deliberately dialed back the notion of homosexuality as a disorder, I still found all the language to be terribly, terribly grating and demeaning when I first sort of glanced over the site the day it was released. But there is something that's interesting about it, which is that although it's treated, homosexuality is still sort of treated as an affliction or as a struggle that the individuals have to deal with, it has been de-awfulized in a certain way that I think is brought into relief by the backlash, the sort of conservative backlash that you've seen in some of the Mormon community on this issue, particularly the backlash against the idea that simply being gay or having gay, inclinations or same-sex attraction is not sinful. I've seen a lot of backlash against this, based on the idea that if homosexuality is sinful and we're going to be judged on both our deeds and our thoughts, then you can't just give these people a free pass for having homosexual thoughts. On the other hand, there's we're totally willing when it comes to the impulse to do a lot of other engage in a lot of other problematic behaviors to sort of give that a pass, to say you're not going to be judged for desiring to sin in certain ways. You're not going to be judged because you have an impulse to, I don't know, gamble or something like that, as long as you sort of keep that in check and don't engage in it. And what's so interesting then is that this new emphasis that simply being gay or having homosexual feelings is not a sin, it sort of puts it on a level playing field. I mean, for the longest time, homosexuality was kind of the uber sin, this super evil sin that could kind of, you know, trigger the destruction of all of civilization or whatever. And now, although it's still configured as wrong, it's sort of on the same playing field as everything else. It's just one more potential temptation or struggle that isn't qualitatively different from any of the others.
Let me read a couple of comments from our Facebook page. Weston writes, basically, I applaud any movement in language and behavior, but I think this website is far from revolutionary. In fact, I argue that it just might be more dangerous, as it encourages and seems to imply the near impossible, if not impossible, task of reversing one's sexuality, or anyway, suppressing one's sexual urges. Todd writes, I was at a ward Christmas party when I found out about the website on Facebook from a Buddhist friend of mine from Oklahoma. My first thought, he wrote, was that this is going to blow people's minds, Mormon and non-Mormon alike. I spent some time on the website today, and this website indicates some major revisions in baseline thinking about homosexuality. It will take some time for many members to come around. Kate writes, although I think it's wonderful the church is trying to temper the highly charged rhetoric surrounding the issue, this will not silence the demand for marriage rights. Let's go back to the phones. Let's see. Mohammed is with us in Salt Lake. Mohammed, welcome.
Hi, Doug.
Hi.
So my biggest concern here is that we're still talking about being gay as a sexual thing. And I think there's a lot more to being gay. As a gay man, I need the spiritual and the emotional connection with other males. And the stories which are found on the website talk about seeing that, okay, I'm gay, I'm going to marry a female, and I suppress my sexual desires, but how do I deal with my emotions to want to connect and grow with other men?
Kendall, what do you think?
I don't know if I would totally agree with that assessment. Looking at all of the interviews on there and the perspective that they're taking, I don't think there's a too heavy emphasis on the sexual. I think it actually allows for, and there are some clear statements, especially by Elder Christofferson, that this is a very complex thing, that they do acknowledge that there's an emotional, psychological, spiritual aspect to
sexuality. This is where
sexuality.
You are. I mean, you agree with Mohammed on that point, that's more than just a sexual dynamic.
Absolutely.
There's a spiritual.
Knowing what it's like to be gay myself and knowing what it's like to be human and have sexuality, I understand that just like a heterosexual person, my sexuality is comprised of, you know, a spectrum of, you know, emotional, spiritual, intellectual, you know, needs for intimacy and connection, just like a heterosexual person. And I think the website does actually pushes closer to that. Now, yeah, the fact that there's a heavy emphasis on stories of people or inclusion of stories of people who have married opposite sex, I could see where somebody might interpret it as focusing on sexual, you know, just sex as sexuality. But overall, I don't think that's there. I think they acknowledge it's complex.
Hmm. Kendall Wilcox with us. His film project called Far Between is also on the steering committee for Mormons Building Bridges. Bradley Kramer is also with us. He's a blogger at By Common Consent. And John Charles Duffy is a visiting professor of comparative religion at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. We're going to take another break. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about a new website launched late last week by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which explores the church's position on same-sex attraction. 801-585-WEST, the number two, join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones. Mike is with us in Park City. Mike, welcome.
Hi. My comment was that sexuality and marriage and gayness is such an intensely personal decision that really mostly just affects the two people making that decision to be married. I find a lot of frustration in the politicization of those decisions, especially when it comes to like Josh Weed, who, you know, I probably wouldn't have made the decision that he made to consider himself gay but marry a woman. But that's his decision. And, you know, when he first came out and talked about that, people on both sides were condemning him. People from the church are saying, well, this is an example of what gay men should do. And gay men are saying, oh, he shouldn't do that because that's not being true to himself. But I actually think it's being extremely true to himself in the face of lots of obvious opposition from all possible angles.
Well, let me get some reaction. John Charles Duffy, talk about that, if you would. I mean, the idea that these are very personal decisions and people ought to be free to make these decisions based on all of those things that you throw into the mix.
Well, that is one interesting thing I find about the way Josh Weed talks about his situation, because he does sound very pluralistic, almost sort of live and let live. I have my path, you have your path. And I suppose if you're a sort of live and let live kind of person, that can be an encouraging sign. Of course, I would point out that the function of that primarily, I think, is for Josh to and others like him to appeal for the validity of their choice, appealing for that validity to be recognized both by people within the gay community who would condemn the choice, but also, again, urging it to be recognized as a valid choice within Mormonism. That is to say, the validity of him marrying and yet still claiming that his homosexuality is probably immutable. That's what's new about this website, the way in which it validates that kind of option, which is not an option that's been on the table before. Mm.
Let me play another clip. This is from Elder Todd Christofferson of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. Because it's interesting what he talks about, sort of drawing the line. Not a lot is said about gay marriage, but enough seems to be said about it. Here again from the new LDS website.
Well, there shouldn't be a perception or an expectation that the church's doctrines or position have changed or are changing. It's simply not true, and we want youth and all people to understand that. The doctrines that relate to human sexuality and gender are really central to our theology. And marriage between a man and a woman and the families that come from those marriages, that's all central to God's plan and to the opportunities that he offers to us here and hereafter. And so homosexual behavior is contrary to those doctrines, has been, always will be, and can never be anything but transgression.
Kendall Wilcox, what do you think? I mean, it's that's pretty clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And which I think sort of underscores, obviously did it for effect, that sticking point.
Mm-hmm. The impasse. Again, nothing new. From my perspective, again, taking it back to the broader context of the website, what the website hopefully can and will do with the general membership of the church is get them engaged in these questions and these conversations about what it really is like for their brothers and sisters to be gay and lesbian in the context of the church or out. Get them thinking more, get them thinking deeper and asking better questions, not sort of the polarizing questions, but like deeper questions about the doctrine, which he brings up, says it's not
changing.
But
why do they have to include that? That was clear. Why did he have to say that? I mean, do you think, sort of deference to those leaders within the church who might be uneasy about where they're headed?
It could be, but I also think it's just their clear statement about where they are at currently, right?
Yeah.
It could also be a way to manage or mitigate the impact of just including the words gay and lesbian in here and what, you know, the impact that people might, you know, how that might impact people's thinking. But hopefully this will push people into these conversations about, well, okay, so this is our accepted current doctrine, but can we have really respectful and grounded conversations about why? Why is this the doctrine? What is this based on? What is it exactly about? Rather than just this commonly held belief and understanding. Well, let's ask why.
John Charles, go ahead.
This is a really important point, and it's why ultimately my stance toward the website is largely pessimistic. I think people who are looking at this website and are seeing in it a sign of hope that the church could continue to liberalize its teachings and its approach to homosexuality, I'm really not optimistic that's going to happen, because what's happening with the website is there's a certain language being adopted which is intended to make the church's fundamental opposition to homosexual behavior and therefore to same-sex marriage more culturally palatable, to present that opposition as not bigoted or prejudiced or hostile, but to present it as loving, as civil, as respectful, and reasonable. And if the church is successful through this new language, this new presentation, of avoiding the kind of cultural stigma that could attach to a conservative religion at a time when the larger society's views of homosexuality are becoming more liberal, if they can evade that cultural stigma, they will have less incentive in the future to rethink their position any further.
I agree that that's what I think. I think that's what the church leader, part of what church leaders are trying to do here. But I also don't think that they'll be successful on the one hand. And then on the other hand, I think that they will have, through their efforts to sort of make this position more palatable and to promote outreach and compassion, I think they will have sort of unleashed forces of change and shift at the ground level that will actually continue to lead to liberalization as you sort of see generational overturn. I think it's really significant. I mean, this snippet from Elder Christofferson, I think, as it's sort of positioned on this website, I think represents a very interesting tension right now in the way that the church is sort of publicly presents itself. You really have two things happening at once. Something that's been in place for a long time is that the church has this kind of the way that it presents itself officially, right? You get LDS.org and General Conference. You have this sort of carefully managed message that's subject to all kind of mechanisms of approval and revision and what inside the church is called correlation, right? Things that are very official and managed right down to the, you know, the dots on the I's and the crosses on the T's. On the other hand, you've seen a sort of counter discourse to this emerge, which is the I'm a Mormon approach to public image, which is that Mormonism is just the sum total of all these sort of diverse individual experiences at the ground level. So is Mormonism this message that gets – is Mormonism LDS.org or is Mormonism Mormon.org? Is it whatever is sort of whatever message is crafted by this intense bureaucratic apparatus, or is it just what individuals at the ground level say about themselves? And what's interesting – part of what's so interesting to me as an anthropologist about this particular website is that it seems to draw, in terms of aesthetics and overall presentation, much more from the I'm a Mormon side of the equation. They try to drop official Mormonism in here in a couple of places and kind of make sure that the official voice is felt on the site. But overall, the site seems much more drawn from a version of Mormonism that privileges the individual experience over the correlated message.
Let me get another call in here. Mary is with us from Salt Lake City. Mary, welcome.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had more of a comment. I have been married to a man who has same-sex attraction. When we were first married, I was not aware of his struggle. After it came out, he shared with me his belief that serving a mission, reading the scriptures, going to church, praying, and then finally getting married, that these issues would somehow weed their way out of him. And I feel that the church has done a huge injustice. I'm glad that they're trying to change their message, but I feel like it's something that I don't know if they've thought how much it can affect other people. We're still married. We have 6 children, and we have a very open relationship as far as communication goes, and I feel like that is the only way that we have been able to stay married. I feel that it's something that can be achieved, but I feel like we're very rare in the fact that he has been so open with me. I feel like it's taken a lot of the guilt that drives more emotion. That's really all I wanted to share.
I'm glad you did. Mary, thanks. Kendall Wilcox, let me ask you this finally. And reacting to Mary as you go, it seems like you have, you're on one hand, you're seeing the same old rhetoric that you've seen in the past, but seeing something remarkably new here, reason for hope, hoping that when the conversation gets going, actual conversations about what, gosh, why do we think about that, that you have that sense of hope that things will change. And I wonder if you finally sense that in many ways, leaders like Oakes and Christofferson and those people in that on the website, they don't seem to fully understand it completely themselves.
Absolutely. No, yeah. I appreciate efforts like those of Elder Christofferson, I think Elder Oakes, where they are trying to engage with it, you know. And for me, that's the overall message of this website, believing Mormons are trying to engage with their moral imagination, their spiritual imagination of what is it like to be gay and yet be prohibited from acting upon it. What is that really like? And it's very complex, very confusing. But if we're all going there and trying to understand what that's like, that's going to move the conversation forward in positive ways.
It's Kendall Wilcox, director of the ongoing film project Far Between and a member of Mormons Building Bridges. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Bradley Kramer, a blogger at By Common Consent, and John Charles Duffy, a visiting professor of comparative religions at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. We've received a lot of responses from you, and we encourage you to go to our website. I think we've got that thing figured out now, and you can continue the conversation. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.